schools in Duval County are closed today in the wake of Hurricane Matthew. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9, and make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. And just ahead, we speak with Duval Superintendent Nicolai Vitti with an update on your child's school as we take a look at the cleanup from Matthew. Schools across the region are closed outside of Duval as well. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, marking International Day of the Girl here in Jacksonville, plus Jack's Innovation Week is kicking off in a few days too, and Culpeper on the sports weekend that wasn't because of the storm, all of that ahead. But first this hour, cleanup is underway and those insurance claims are being filed right now after Hurricane Matthew blew through northeast Florida Friday, packing a wallop. Florida Governor Rick Scott took a tour of the hardest hit areas over the weekend, all the way from Volusia County to the Georgia state line, and he vowed to bring federal support to this area to help families and businesses that suffered flooding and power outages and other damage from the storm. Now this Monday morning, as the cleanup and debris removal continues, schools across our listening area will remain closed today due to power outages in the aftermath of Matthew. Duval County Superintendent Nicolai Vitti joins us now in studio with an update for parents. Good morning.
Good morning.
And it's 549-2937 if you have a question about your child's school. It's Monday. There are still widespread outages after Matthew blew through Friday. Can you bring us up to date on today's decision to close school in Duval County and what you're looking at right now?
Sure. So throughout the weekend, we were hard at work. Our first focus was to clean the shelters. We had seven schools used as shelters over the weekend. Those were deeply cleaned, food, cots, etc., removed actually as of the end of the day Saturday, with the exception of Atlantic Coast High School, which was cleaned and emptied on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And then after that, it was to gain an assessment of readiness for opening on Monday. And our principals played an important role in going back to their schools despite what was happening at their own homes with their families. Either a principal or designee went to each one of our 160 schools to determine readiness for Monday. And that meant checking power, telephone access, telecoms, and debris that would be blocking drop-off areas and pickup areas. And then we deployed maintenance crews to cut trees that were in the way of driveways and started to coordinate with JEA to turn the power on in all of our schools. So as of this morning, all of our schools have power.
Good news. I know there were some that were still out.
Yeah, there were some
before.
That were still out yesterday. But as of late last night and early this morning, all of our schools have power. There's a couple elementary schools that have partial power, but all of our schools have power. And it's been a strong collaboration between the school district, the mayor's office, and JEA to make schools the emphasis regarding restoring power. And no one will know the behind-the-scenes work that happened with Duval County Public Schools, JEA, the mayor's office, to get things operational and running. And our principals have been phenomenal with their outreach. They stayed at the shelters to help with the work there. Our maintenance crews have been out cutting trees, as I mentioned, and custodial crews have been in schools to clean up flooding that has happened in hallways and in classrooms. Ultimately, we decided to close because of uncertainty regarding power. And hearing from a lot of employees that were just returning to their homes yesterday, and many of our employees without power. Big picture, we could have opened issues with power and just being sensitive to our employees needing an extra day to be ready. And when I say employees, obviously I'm focusing on teachers, but even bus drivers, part-time employees, custodians, etc.
And if you're just tuning in, as we speak with Duval Superintendent Nicolai Vitti about the aftermath of Hurricane Matthew, schools in Duval closed today, along with other counties around the listening area. Give us a call and let us know how you're cleaning up right now at 549-2937. And also, if you have any questions about your child's school. So you mentioned flooding still in some schools. Atlantic Coast, of course, was one of the four designated shelters during Matthew. What was that experience like for educators and those seeking shelter over at Atlantic Coast High?
Well, actually, we went up to 7 schools, and we started with only 4, and then as the reality of the storm built up, we used more shelters. But I think it was a reflection of how important our schools are to the community. I think people forget that the schools are a part of the community. They're assets that are owned by taxpayers. And I think it was a proud point for me as superintendent to see our employees getting involved in a deeper way in the community. And it just shows how valuable just traditional public education is to our community, especially in times of crisis. And, you know, despite all the challenges of running a large organization like ours with over 10,000 employees, when you call people in the middle of a crisis and they answer their phone on their first ring, and these are people that don't even have power in their own homes, it's humbling. And it's rewarding as the superintendent CEO to see that many people care. And to see 160, we had at one moment 160 principals and our district team on Decon radios talking about the state of readiness for Monday. That level of coordination, despite the storm, like I said, was humbling, and it was a proud point for me as superintendent. And it just reminds me why I do my work every day. And just so proud to work with people that I work with.
Absolutely. And kudos as well, as you mentioned, to all of the emergency responders, City Hall, the governor being extremely responsive, JEA working so hard right now to get everybody's power back on. I know in some parts of town, folks have been without power for several days. I believe Mandarin is one area. And as frustrating as that is, certainly everybody did demonstrate a willingness to do whatever is needed to get us through this storm. Now, as you mentioned, Superintendent Vitti, school closed today in Duval County. Schools also closed in St. John's and Clay and other counties. What's the picture like for tomorrow? And are there any particular schools you want to mention that parents might be listening right now that they need to be aware of flooding in their child's school? What's the picture looking like tomorrow?
Well, we had dozens of schools that were facing flooding. We're down as of this morning to only about 10 that have still some level of flooding in classrooms or hallways. I believe by the end of the day today, those schools should be cleaned. So you may walk into a classroom with some water that was undetected, but overall, I think we were able to clean up the major flood areas. So students and employees should be coming back to school Tuesday with as much normalcy as possible. There will always be something that's unexpected. We tried to run the air conditioners when power came on over the weekend. There may be some delays with air conditioning. We may only have two to three meals for breakfast and lunch, and not the same variety, but breakfast and lunch will be served. We're hoping that all of our bus drivers show up to work tomorrow morning. We had an indication that we would have significant absences on today if we ran school. Tomorrow it should be much better. So there will be some inconveniences, but we are ready to go tomorrow morning.
Excellent. Well, we so appreciate you stopping by this morning with this very important update. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
He's Duval County School Superintendent Nicolay Vitti. Again, school is closed today in Duval County and other areas around Northeast Florida, other outlying counties, but will be back in class tomorrow. Much more still ahead on this program. We'll be right back.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Constanji Brooks Smith and Prophet, LLP, representing employers in labor, employee relations, and workplace law matters since 1946, providing local and national clients with labor and employment law representation with offices in Jacksonville, Tampa, Miami, and Lakeland. More at Constanji.com.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, analysis of the second debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump in St. Louis and how the candidates perform in the town hall setting and what that means for the final weeks of the campaign.
Weekdays at 10, right after First Coast Connect on 89.9 FM WJCT.
For everyone discovering life after 50, WJCT proudly presents Next Avenue, a website where grown-ups keep growing. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue. It's today's modern guide for adulthood, part two. Sponsored in part by AARP, Real Possibilities.
Welcome back. Well, still lots of discussion about last night's second presidential debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. It kicked off with Trump apologizing after a videotape was revealed the other day showing him making extremely lewd and offensive comments about women. In the aftermath of that video being released between Trump and former Access Hollywood host Billy Bush, many prominent Republicans disavowed Trump and withdrew their support from his candidacy. Now, issues affecting women and girls were part of last night's very contentious town hall between the candidates. And as the presidential campaign moves on, this morning we are looking ahead to an important event on the calendar. It's tomorrow, International Day of the Girl. This is a global youth-led movement fighting for gender justice using girl-led activism around the world, including right here in Jacksonville, because issues that affect girls globally are just as critical here. Everything from poverty to sexual abuse, teenage pregnancy, education, and more. Robin Rose is Executive Director of Girls Inc. of Jacksonville, and she joins us now with a look ahead to tomorrow's observance downtown of International Day of the Girl. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And here's our question to callers. What are your questions about International Day of the Girl, and what did you think of last night's presidential debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump and the discussion about allegations of sexual impropriety, issues affecting women and girls? Give us a call at 549-2937. And in a moment, I want to get deeply into International Day of the Girl and why it's so important to educate our listeners about that. But first, Robin Rose, we were treated to a spectacle last night of Donald Trump bringing Bill Clinton's accusers to the debate town hall, women that have accused Bill Clinton of inappropriate behavior. The debate began with Trump apologizing for the comments he made on video where he appeared to brag about his ability as a celebrity to grope and engage in predatory behavior toward women. We also listened to Hillary Clinton talking about her efforts over the decades to fight for women and girls. And so gender was very much at play in last night's town hall debate. What were your thoughts? I realize you live in St. Augustine and you were without power.
Yeah.
So you were not able to watch the debate. So let's be clear on that because of Hurricane Matthew. But I would really like to get your thoughts about how these issues so intimately affecting women and girls are factoring into this presidential race.
I am generally sorry that I didn't get that opportunity to watch the debates. However, just in a more global sense in regards to women and girls, you know, the mission of Girls Inc. is very much around respect, respecting for themselves, respect for their bodies, their body image, and just respect for one another generally. And so I think that throughout the prior debates where women's body image and weight gain and all of that have been such issues, that really feeds in, unfortunately, to one of the issues that we know globally and nationally for girls is that 78% of girls are unhappy with their bodies. And a recent survey talked about how girls as young as five-year-olds are putting themselves on diets because they are judging themselves against an unrealistic standard. So I think that those are still issues that women's worth in regards to how they look is a still critical issue for us. And that is one of the things that Girls Inc. does address in its programming.
Yes, absolutely. And let's talk about that. Because the tagline for Girls Inc. is encouraging girls and supporting girls in their efforts to be strong, smart, mm-hmm. and bold.
Correct.
As we talk about the rhetoric of this campaign and how damaging activists for women and girls think it's been to young girls' self-esteem and body image, how difficult is it to get this message out when this is the tone and tenor of our politics and what we saw on stage last night?
Well, it is. I think it's always a challenge. I mean, certainly this political election has brought it up to the surface, whereas before it's been more below that surface, even though you see media, television that is portraying an unrealistic image for many girls' standards to be able to meet.
So you're saying sexism and misogyny is an undercurrent in our society, always. But the presidential race has brought it right out into the open.
Well, it certainly has articulated that and brought it to the attention on a much bigger stage, to be sure. And so I think, though, for us in our programming, that it gives us opportunities to have these conversations, which we do already, but even just as that platform to talk about that and what do girls do about that and how do they have the ability to advocate for themselves and to be okay with their bodies and who they are, with their gender and the way they look, and about their intelligence and all of that, and about them defining their self-worth and their possibility based on what they want as opposed to what a culture can dictate.
When you look at the website for International Day of the Girl, this is a description. It's a youth-led movement fighting for gender justice and youth rights. Our work to dismantle patriarchy and fight for social justice is rooted in girl-led activism across the country using October 11th as a day of national action. We are outraged by the neglect and devaluation of female-identifying youth and committed to examining these issues, including girls' voices in the movement. And we advocate, educate, and organize on behalf of girls. So with all of that said, tomorrow is International Day mm-hmm. of the Girl. You will be bringing in to speak in downtown Jacksonville, Kalisha DeSource's policy advisor to the White House Committee on Women and Girls. How will her speech address the issues globally for girls and also here in downtown Jacksonville and across our listening area?
So the United Nations created this day back in 2011. It was first celebrated in 2012. To really raise awareness around the importance of investing in the education of girls, as well as breaking generational cycles of welfare, poverty, and violence all over the world. So Kalisha's message is going to be very much aligned with that, about why it is important to invest in girls in their education, why that when you do that, even starting at really young ages, that it helps prevent high school dropout rates. It helps prevent those generational cycles of welfare and poverty. It helps to ensure successful post-secondary transitions where girls can have a different future than possibly what they've had in their families or seen in the past. So she's going to be talking about that. I'm going to be talking a little bit about some of the issues for girls here locally.
And there are a lot to discuss. Nationally, 1 in 4 girls will not finish high school in the United States. 78% of girls grades K through 12 are unhappy with their bodies. 3 in 10 will become pregnant as a teenager. 1 in 5 girls will be a victim of sexual abuse. As we talk about last night's debate and the International Day of the Girl, which is tomorrow, we're going to go now to your calls. It's 549-2937. John is in Atlantic Beach this morning. Hi, John. Hope you made it through the storm okay over the weekend. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you very much. And yes, we somewhat made it through the storm okay.
Good to hear that.
I, I actually called in to tell you that we survived yesterday. But speaking of the International Girls celebration that we need to have, there are some basic issues that drive a lot of what this is, at least in my understanding of my beliefs. One, you have to start the process culturally at a very, very early age to stop blaming girls for being wrong, just for being alive. I got lucky enough to travel around the world in the service of the country, and I got to see a lot of different cultures who treat women in many different ways. Some treat them very well, some treat them equally, some treat them quite poorly. The issue of teaching girls in American society, which we have done for the past 40 to 50 years, that it's your requirement as a woman to always be thin, trim, and pretty, is unfortunate, but it's part of our society. Unless we change the way we think as a society from cradle to grave, a lot of this is an uphill battle. I have a mother, I have two sisters, I have a daughter, and I've tried to work very hard as a man in society not to have the base characteristic flaws that we see in our presidential candidate, which is unfortunate. And to be honest, I'm not a supporter of him, but I don't necessarily disagree with everything he has to say. It's just unfortunate that we're sensationalizing things that we should try to just say, that's bad, let's not talk about that guy anymore, let's talk about that guy's behavior. I think that will do more to substantiate the value of women in society as a whole, and I'm happy to let your guests carry forward. I think they're doing a great job. As a guy, I celebrate women all the time, not because I'm a guy, but because I think they're equal creatures on the planet.
Thank you, John. Robin Rose.
Thank you for your wonderful words and your message. I think that there's a lot of truth in what you are absolutely saying. I do think that it is an uphill battle. I hate to use negativity words like that, but I do think that we have a lot of work to do, and when we do a lot of this in our programs, is that we help girls be confident about who they are and what they are, and to be able to take that through the rest of their lives, so that that self-confidence and about who they are and what they're able to do translates well into their possibility, into their careers.
And full disclosure, I used to serve on the board of Girls Inc. of Jacksonville, so I'm familiar with your programming. You are engaged with curriculum in the Duval County Public Schools, working with girls throughout the district on issues of self-esteem, body image,
yes,
literacy, teenage pregnancy prevention, and more, all of this designed to support and empower girls, which I think is such vital work. When you look at the 2015 Youth Risk Behavior Survey, Duval County middle school students last year reported girls are 52% more likely to be bullied than boys. One in three middle school girls in Duval County has attempted suicide. One in three. So when you say we have a lot of work to do, and you and Girls Inc. are pushing against this undercurrent of misogyny, frankly, that we deal with in this society and that every society deals with, it is not easy to change a culture's attitudes.
It is not easy to change a culture's attitudes. And, you know, I'm really grateful because Girls Inc. Is just one of the many single gender providers here in Duval County that is working to address these issues and to change this thinking. So we're just grateful to be in partnership with many of the organizations here in Duval County that is really working with our girls starting at very young ages. Our programming starts at kindergarten, and then we go all the way up to middle school. Hopefully in the future we'll be adding that high school initiative as well too.
International Day of the Girl is tomorrow. What are your thoughts about that and the gender issues that came up during last night's debate town hall? Lisa is along I-95 down in Volusia County. Hi, Lisa. Thanks for holding. Good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning. I think this is such important work, and I think that we're really coming into the year of the girl and the woman this year. And, of course, with that, we are seeing the rise of misogyny coming out to the surface. And I think that watching the debate last night, Donald Trump surrounding himself with four women that, you know, he says Bill Clinton abused, and using them as shields is just another form of his abuse of women. And many women and young women that I know have felt the toxicity of this. We've actually felt physically and mentally ill, and some of us that have suffered from abuse or sexual violence are being triggered by this. And I feel that his entire campaign, he's always attacking women, whether they're reporters or beauty queen pageants or even women that have stuck with their marriages, like his wife did, by the way. And the debate, to me, only exemplified that.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, Lisa. You say that Trump used the women who've accused Bill Clinton as human shields by, he held a press conference with them before the debate, and then he brought them into the debate hall. What would you say to those who are watching all of this play out, and while they deplore the rhetoric of this campaign, they feel that that there needs to be a fuller accounting of Bill Clinton's behavior with women, that this is an issue that cuts across party lines, and that that the women had a right to have their stories heard as well? What would you say to that piece of this?
Well, there was a full accountability for that. Bill Clinton was impeached for it, and that was back in the 90s. So, and also, Bill Clinton isn't running for president. So I think that I would love for them to have a platform for their voice, but I think having Trump, who is abusive to women, using their voices is a disservice to them and other women that have been abused. It politicized it, and I don't think that's the proper platform. Hillary Clinton is running for president, and Hillary Clinton was, he cheated on her. So it was abusing her again. And that's how I personally felt about it, and I know a lot of other women that felt deeply for these women, but were also triggered by his behavior, and then him stalking and lurking around her on the stage and coming up physically behind her was a physical manifestation of that. So I thought that any message that those women could have had was definitely overplayed by his behavior.
All right.
Unfortunately, that's how I feel about that.
Lisa, down in Volusia County, thanks so much for calling. Robin Rose, you didn't see the debate last night, but what are your thoughts about Lisa's comments? And she mentioned something that came up a little bit on social media after the debate, just the nonverbals in the debate. Some women perceived Donald Trump's stalking around or walking around the stage closely to Hillary, they perceived it in that way. Of course, not everyone did, and also this notion that women who've been or girls who've been sexually assaulted are now being triggered by this discussion that we're having as a country right now.
Well, my PhD is in conflict resolution, but I'm not a psychologist. But I think that situations like this can easily trigger people from their own personal experiences. I can't say that we're seeing that in our programs with our girls. But I think that, again, the Girls Inc. mission is very much around respect, and it is about giving girls a voice to advocate for themselves. Because the statistics are so high, with 1 in 5 girls will be a victim of sexual abuse, that we give girls the communication tools to be able to advocate for themselves and mm-hmm. to tell people so that things like this do not happen.
And for International Day of the Girl, which is tomorrow, this is girl-led activism. How will local girls be part of this global day of recognition and action?
So we have some of our middle school girls in our programs that will be attending our event tomorrow. They're going to be introducing our speaker, Ms. DeSources. They're going to be using their voices as well to talk to the people in the room about how Girls Inc. programming is helping them to become strong, smart, and bold to be able to create the life of their dreams.
And if you're just tuning in, as we discuss International Day of the Girl, which is tomorrow, Local observances will be taking place. Global observances will be taking place. What are your questions about that? And we're also continuing to discuss the gender issues that came up during last night's presidential debate. It's 549-2937. Let's go now to James in Orange Park. Hi, James. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you very much for allowing me to voice my opinion. I am very, very distraught at the way women and girls are treated, really. And I believe much of this comes from home training. I was always reminded by my mother, my aunt, older sisters, that women should be respected. And I believe throughout my life that women should be respected, and girls. And they should not be intimidated when they're raped by animals. Animals, they rape women. And then they're intimidated. When they go to court, sometimes they're intimidated there by judges who don't care. But one thing we must remember, all of us, whether you're a man or whether you're a woman, you've got to remember that had it not been for women, none of us would be here.
Thank you, James. Thank you, James. Susan up in Camden County, Georgia. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. I just really have a comment to the last caller, Lisa from Volusia County, which is, you know, I was just kind of a little upset. Like, there's, like, no responsibility held for women. I mean, like, these women knew who they were getting involved with. I mean, they knew these men, Trump or Clinton, were both married men. I mean, so where does that responsibility lie for women?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, why are they the victims? I mean, I don't understand why. I mean, they're adults. They were educated women. I don't, you know, get why Trump is such the bad guy here because he used profanity. I mean, please.
All right. Thanks, Susan. Susan up in South Georgia. What about that? What about her question?
I'm not sure that I have a comment on that one.
So you don't agree with her point of view then that that Donald Trump's offensive comments about women are, you know, there are certainly millions of Donald Trump supporters that don't see it as that big of a deal. They see it as unfortunate, but they don't agree with the decision among some leading Republicans to disavow Trump's candidacy.
Well, I'm going to take this back again to respect. It is about thought and intention behind those behind a comment, and about how comments get communicated, and how they are received by another individual. Mm-hmm. I think it is just on a general human basis disrespectful to talk about people in a way that marginalizes them. I don't care what gender you are.
Jane out in Jacksonville Beach. Hi, Jane. Hope you survived the storm and that Matthew didn't hit you too hard. Good morning. Go ahead.
Thank you. And I was one of the fortunate ones. I didn't totally hear the last caller because I was on hold and trying not to blow out your speaker. But as a lifelong Republican, I am embarrassed. I am embarrassed that this sick person is representing what used to be my party. I am further embarrassed that there are actual people that want to dismiss these terrible comments as just locker room banter. Maybe if you're a reality show host or a private citizen, that's one thing. But one of the people that the few remaining positions in our country that, yes, you do need to look up to is the President of the United States. And we just can't have somebody like that running our country. Yes, I thought Clinton should have been more accountable, Mr. Clinton, when he did whatever he did, but he is not running for president now. Donald Trump is, and he needs to take a slow boat and go away and just never come back. And I'll get off the air so I can listen.
All right. Thank you for that call. Lots of spirited discussion about that program last night, which I have to say was often very difficult to watch. Now, let's close with a look ahead to International Day of the Girl. It is tomorrow. You will be having an event downtown at the Jesse Ball DuPont Center Lecture Hall with your keynote speaker, Kalisha DeSouris, policy advisor to the White House Committee on Women and Girls. Quickly, how can people be part of this?
Well, we still have some room. If you would like to attend, you can contact us at our offices at area code 904-731-9933. It is limited space. So if you have an interest in hearing that, hearing her speak, we would love to have you, but you need to RSVP and call our offices.
Yes. Getting close to making that decision, but still a few seats left. International Day of the Girl is tomorrow. We're pleased to be joined by Robin Rose, Executive Director of Girls, Inc. of Jacksonville. Thank you. Much more still ahead later. Cole Pepper with a look at how Hurricane Matthew stopped the clock on local sports. But up next, highlighting Jack's Innovation Week. Back in a moment.
On the next Fresh Air, actress Gabby Hoffman. She co-stars in Transparent and was in the cast of Girls. She started acting as a child and grew up in New York's famed Chelsea Hotel in the 1980s.
I grew up with artists and drag queens and transvestites, as they were called then. And these were just my neighbors and friends and the people who were raising me.
Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
From the panhandle to the peninsula, the Sunshine State's politics are as hot as the weather. Trump versus Clinton, the race for the U.S. Senate, new political boundaries and familiar issues. Join 89.9 every Friday at 1 p.m. for Decision Florida. Let your voice be heard.
If you're looking for the best blues show, look to the Blues Horizon. Each week, join me for the best blues, both classic and contemporary. Blues Horizon, every Monday night at 11 p.m. on WJCT 89.9 FM radio. Take a ride with us to some unknown places of musical light and shade. Blues Horizon, every Monday night at 11 on 89.9 FM. So many roads.
Welcome back. Well, it's an amazing new effort to spark local innovation and creativity in the arts, business, other domains, and to promote collaboration around town. Jack's Innovation Week kicks off in just a few days in the city's urban core, and whether you're a business owner, a creative, an investor, an educator, or just interested, you need to attend this. We're pleased to welcome Kate Stewart, Executive Director of Jack's Co., that's Community of Entrepreneurs, Jennifer Giltrop, Deputy Director of the Jacksonville Public Library, and Coretta Hill, Vice President with the United Way. Ladies, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kate Stewart, let's begin with you. Jack's Innovation Week seems to be coming in the nick of time, with one spark now fading somewhat from the scene, the big crowdfunding festival that Jacksonville's hosted for the last several years. What is Jack's Innovation Week?
Well, we're so excited about it. It's been in the works for a little while. And it's something that we're modeling on Baltimore Innovation Week and Philly Tech Week and other, probably seven other cities around the country. And the idea is to bring together innovators of all types. So we designed it recognizing that creators and innovators really are in any domain, not just in business. So this is an opportunity for us to create an annual event that mm-hmm. celebrates our innovators and supports growth of innovation in Northeast Florida.
Let's talk about the partners in this, including the United Way, Coretta Hill. How is the city coming together to collaborate on this really exciting week?
Thank you. Well, United Way of Northeast Florida, we're very honored to partner with JaxCo this year for our second year of an innovation, social innovation challenge upstream, which actually involves young adults. And it gives young adults the opportunity to showcase and their bright and best ideas for change around social issues in our community. And we will announce the finalists of those applicants this weekend at the Jacksonville Innovation Conference, and we're really excited to be a partner.
And that conference is coming up. More on that in a moment. Jennifer Giltrop, Deputy Director of the Jacksonville Public Library, how's the library involved?
The library's thrilled to be partnering on this Innovation Week. We will be hosting the Hack a Jacks on Friday from 10 to 6 p.m. at the main library in our new makerspace, which is all about collaboration, creation, and exploring opportunities. And as the students, college students, will come together and explore a community social issue and solve that together with a chance to win cash prizes. So we're very excited to host that event.
And you hope, Kate Stewart, that Jack's Innovation Week will spark collaboration year-round, making Jacksonville an innovation hub. What will that mean as a practical matter? What do you want that to look like?
Well, I think we have a lot of very encouraging events happening, whether OneSpark continues or not, and I hope it will. But individual isolated events don't make an innovation hub. We really have to create a situation where we are launching high-growth companies and supporting innovators of all types year-round. And that means creating the landscape, the culture, the capital, the community. And so the event this week is meant to launch that and try to consolidate and advocate for a year-round ecosystem.
And let's talk about the kickoff event. People need to mark their calendars. Are you hoping to do somewhat of what OneSpark set out to do, connect venture capital with creative ideas that can spark new businesses? Is that going to be happening at this kickoff?
Well, sure. We hope that happens all the time. But yeah. But that's not actually the focus of this kickoff. Other than we are having an event on Friday, which is bringing in investors together at a pitch event. But our main event is the Innovation Connection Conference on Saturday, which is bringing over 60 speakers together. And the focus there is primarily on community and education. So innovators need to know how to start a business. Many of us don't know how to do that. So a lot of the basic things that we need to be able to move the needle a bit, we want to provide at that conference and then continue those things through the year.
And in addition to the kickoff event, other events are happening. The website is jacksinnovationweek.org. What else is going to be happening over the week?
Lots of stuff. Jennifer mentioned the Hack-a-Jacks. That's our civic student college student hackathon that we're doing on Friday. It'll be our second one. We're partnering with United Way and JPL and other partners on that. We're partnering with TEDx Jacksonville for a closing party in Hemming Park on the 22nd. And then for the 14th through the 21st, we're having many different events. And I think it's probably easiest just to go to the website, look at the schedule there, and see what we have planned. But they're primarily around Riverside and the urban core. And we're trying to create events that are going to be of interest to everybody in our community, anybody who's an enthusiast of innovation.
It's coming up. It's Jack's Innovation Week. Thanks so much for being with us. Kate Stewart, Executive Director of JaxCo, Coretta Hill, Vice President with United Way of Northeast Florida, Jennifer Giltrop, Deputy Director of the Jacksonville Public Library. Go to jacksinnovationweek.org. To find out more, ladies, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Melissa.
And in a moment, why Hurricane Matthew put sports on pause. Culpepper has that right after this.
Colleges can't teach agricultural education to students. Agricultural technology companies teach those students themselves. We're actually creating a huge apprentice grower force just because we don't trust that the market's going to give us good growers.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the future of farming. Next time on Marketplace, we'll have the rest of the day's business news, of course, and the numbers from Wall Street as well.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Coming up, the poetry and the drama of a piano concerto by Brahms. Yefim Bronfman at the piano, Gustavo Dudamel conducting the Los Angeles Philharmonic in concert on the next Performance Today from APM. Weeknights at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, Hurricane Matthew stopped the clock on sports over our stormy weekend.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Cole Pepper here now with a look at the football weekend that wasn't. Good morning.
Yeah, it was sort of a partial for a lot of folks in the area.
Yeah,
and let's start with the one big story from the weekend as far as college football is concerned. And it's not just about a game that hasn't yet been played, but it's sort of about all the circumstances surrounding that. That's the Florida-LSU game that was scheduled for Saturday in Gainesville. Mm-hmm. Officials in Gainesville, I mean, to be fair, waited a long time before making a call on this thing.
Uh-huh.
Probably too long. And I think that created some real concern with LSU, who was willing to fly in at just about any time. But the strange things that happened is that particularly media in LSU, and we haven't heard things specifically from administration at LSU, but a lot of Louisiana media talking about this conspiracy theory now about how Florida didn't want to play LSU and they didn't want to move the game and play it somewhere else and all these other things. And unfortunately, I think what's happened here is that you've got people who have gotten their priorities completely out of line when you start talking about it. I mean, listen, in hindsight, we know more about this storm now than we did before, but I don't think with any better foresight, knowing exactly what was going to happen, that anything would have been any different considering mm-hmm. the damage that happened mm-hmm. along the east coast of Florida. And you've got media members in Louisiana talking about how Florida's trying to dodge, and now you know they don't want to play the game. The SEC saying the game will be played. They'll find a way to make it happen. The challenging part now is that the schedules don't necessarily jive up. There's even been some speculative talk about moving the Florida-Georgia game so Florida can play LSU on that day. That's not going to happen.
Move the world's largest cocktail party?
Right. Again, it's not going to happen. And so it's just another example of the Southeastern college football media losing perspective on the difference between what's important between college football and life. And
right. And I saw some discussion about that over the weekend, that people were most concerned about the hurricane's impact on their game. Which,
right.
You're right. I mean, it's disappointing, but we've got to look at the bigger picture.
Right. And listen, there are all kinds of reasons why not to play football games. We've been through a number of those through the years, weather being a big part of that. I think it's unfortunate that you also have people in Tennessee now chiming in saying, oh, that game, you got to play it with Tennessee's expectations that that Florida would lose to LSU, which would help Tennessee's chances to win the SEC East. And I just mm-hmm. I would just urge everybody, no matter how big a college football fan you might be, to take a half a step back and say, all right, what's important here?
Sure.
And it's pretty clear what is more important than others. And college football doesn't take a step above the safety of people coming to a sporting event.
Absolutely. That said, there is other college football to talk about.
Yeah, interesting and maybe ironic that the Hurricanes played in Miami as the hurricane had gone
and
by.
And the hurricane barely brushed Miami.
Right, they barely got anything there.
Yeah.
And as it turned out, Florida State-Miami, obviously a big rivalry game. And FSU, with a big come-from-behind win, they scored a touchdown to take the lead. And then Miami came back to score what would have been the game-tying touchdown. But the extra point was blocked by the Seminoles, who emerged with a big win in South Florida out of that one. Georgia pushed the game against South Carolina to yesterday, again, making adjustments based on Hurricane Matthew, and Georgia beat South Carolina yesterday there. The Armada pushed their game from Saturday to Wednesday with Indy 11. So that game will be played at Community First Park here in Jacksonville on Wednesday. Makes it for a very busy stretch for the Armada with a lot of Wednesday-Saturday turnarounds for Jacksonville. And then, of course, the Jaguars had the bye week, so they didn't have to worry about any sort of scheduling from that regard.
So for them.
It was well-timed, and they take on the Bears Sunday in Chicago.
And you still don't have power at your house, Culpepper.
I don't.
So I can't thank you enough for coming in here. And
it was a cold shower this morning, I can tell you.
Any coffee at your house?
Not yet.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. You know, JEA is saying they hope to have everybody back on by midnight tonight. Let's say a good thought for that.
Yeah, and I know I've been around a lot. JEA is doing a great job getting
they
everything
are working
up
very
and
hard, yeah.
The next block over, the next block over, the next block over. All with power, never lost it, so I think I may be one of the last, which is just fine. I'll grit my teeth and bear it.
You can hang out here all day. We've got coffee. We've got the lights on. You're welcome to stay, but I know you have a lot to do, and so, I can't thank you enough for
being
here.
I will take that
here.
Coffee, though.
He's Culpepper. Follow him on Twitter, @Culpepper, and check out the Sam and Cole Sports Podcast as well. That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme, composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. Next on Diane Rehm, analysis of Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump's second presidential debate in St. Louis. How the candidates performed in the debate's town hall setting. What it means for the final weeks of the race. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.